Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hi, this is Joshua David Stein. I'm host of the Fatherly Podcast. Today we're talking about kids' design and why it's so bad so often. Our guests are Mark Riegelman II, the coolest playground designer of the coolest playground, Alexandra Lang, architecture critic and author of Design for Childhood, and Ben Kaufman, who's the CEO of CAMP. We recorded it live at CAMP in Manhattan. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Fatherly Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show.
Okay, hey everyone. Mike.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Mike.
Well, my name's Joshua David Stein. I am the host of the Fatherly Podcast. Today we're going to talk about design for kids, toys, retail, environmental, playground. I think one of the questions that we're all parents here, right?
Yeah.
One of the questions that we have, or I have, is why is design for children so often like crummy and not beautiful? And I hope to answer that in 45 minutes or less. And also how it can be wonderful. My guests are Mark Riegelman II. You can stand up and take a bow if you want.
Nice bow.
Mark designed the Domino Sugar Park Playground. Has anyone been there? It's in Williamsburg. It's dope, right? Dope's a word for cool. And you are also an installation, you're an environmental artist as well.
Yep, large scale public art installations.
So he's gonna talk about that. Alexandra Lang is the author of Design of Childhood, a book that came out in 2018 about everything from toy design to urban design and playground design. And we'll talk about that history.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
And you're an architect, architectural and design critic. And Ben Kaufman, whose house we're in, is the CEO of CAMP and CMO of BuzzFeed. And thanks for having us today.
Yeah, thanks for coming to CAMP.
So you are late because you were at Toy Fair.
I was at Toy Fair depressed.
Yeah.
So depressed.
So I also just came from Toy Fair.
Are you depressed also?
You know, I have to say that I'm into sparkly things. Okay. Like I'm into...
Do we have the sequins down there? Flip sequins.
Oh, my God. Have you tried these? Oh, my God. It's so sensual in, like, a sensory way. What depressed you about Toy Fair?
Let's start with the fact that there's no kids there.
No kids allowed. There's no one playing.
There's no one having fun. Everyone's behind like walled booths.
Yeah,
like,
that's what's so messed up.
Like I'm new to this industry. I've never been in the toy industry before, and I imagine Toy Fair being this amazing, crazy place where everyone's just playing with toys and running around and like people having fun. I thought it would be more like Comic-Con, you know? But it's not. It's just a bunch of sad people.
Yeah. So Toy Fair for our listeners and audience is an annual convention for toy manufacturers, mostly wholesale, and they're selling their toys to retail operators. And you're right. Like, I got in a fight with the Melissa and Doug people because they wouldn't let me in. They were like, are you retail? It's like, no, I'm press. They're like, well, we're not allowing press. And I was like, well, I wanted to get physical with them, but I didn't because that would have been inappropriate.
Good choice.
It's in Javits, which is this huge convention center, and most of the booths are closed, and you have to get in there with appointments or whatever. I kind of liked it, though, because as I was telling you before the show, I love seeing, the ghost in the machine. Like, I love seeing, you see all of the trends. You see it all combined. It's like, okay, what's in this year? Sloths, narwhals, unicorns. Sequins, and then what's so, I'm not cursing, so it takes me a while.
Yeah.
What's so extraordinary is that you have sequin sloth unicorns, like now they're doing permutations
of these. Inside the things, yeah. We got a couple products like that.
You're hurting my heart with these descriptions, honestly.
Well, I wanted to ask you, because in the book you write about good toy, bad toy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as it pertains to design and toys, I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I would go to Toy Fair and be like, you don't need any of these toys. Like, all the toys that you need have already been made probably 100 years ago, and, like, that should be it. So, yeah, I mean, one of the things that I found out when I was researching my book is that there has been this distinction between good toys and bad toys since the early 19th century. And basically, a good toy is made out of a natural material, is undecorated, and is open-ended, so kids can do with it kind of whatever they will, and like the good toy is wooden blocks.
Yeah.
And a bad toy is like a Hello Kitty narwhal sequin stuffy, maybe with, I don't know, does it sing? Because
no,
it's
but
like,
it's scented.
Right, it's scented.
Oh yeah, so did like you walk by the scented pillow booth? It was, go on.
Yeah, so basically like everything that you can do to this toy has already been done to it by an adult. So like what is there left for the child to bring to it? Like how can they make it their own? And they can't. They can just buy more of them.
Well, I have a question. Yes.
I hear what you're saying, and I think that well, I want to try to support the narwhal beast thing for a moment,
child.
Because I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I also think that there may be opportunities where this could be a really great toy, and that a child can easily identify with this kind of weird being and have it part of a larger narrative in the context of their home or play school or whatever. And I think that would be a healthy relationship and would qualify that as a good toy in the end, if it can be part, you know, if it helps them with social skills or interacting with other kids, and they bring their kind of like weirdo misfit toy to this, you know, to this thing where they have the kind of standard dolls or whatever. While I probably wouldn't like aesthetically these types of toys, I think that they could be good in the right context or with the right design elements whatever.
So I do a lot of toy reviews for Fatherly, which is just me in a room playing with toys and talking to the camera. It's okay, you know, get good benefits. Thanks, Michael. That's our COO. But I always thought of the good toy, bad toy distinction being like, yeah, this is just an object and it's inanimate and like, yeah, it's fluffy and plush and ridiculous in some way, but it doesn't do anything. Whereas I feel like what I've noticed at Toy Fair is you have the range of, setting aside plushies, right? You have toys that are almost like single function toys, like Hot Wheels, which I know people love Hot Wheels. I don't love Hot Wheels because you can only do, the more advanced it gets, you can only do one thing. You press the button, and the Hot Wheels does this amazing loop-de-loop, Well, your interaction, like your interactive design or whatever, is just one press. So is it true that like good toy, bad toy is about the physicality of the object or about the use? You know what I mean?
Well, I would say it's about both, because a lot of times, kind of the more electronic things get, the easier it is for them to break, and we don't really make things to be repaired. So like part of being a bad toy can be something that breaks and you can never use it again, and then it's just like in the landfill.
Or if it breaks, it becomes a good toy because it's just a
bad part breaks.
But like Hot Wheels is a good example. Like there are lots of kids that love cars, and it's great when they have like a whole set of little cars. Then they make the little cars talk to each other, and like they build a whole like landscape for the cars to occupy. So the problem with the Hot Wheels set is like, if there's only one way you can make the track go, if there are no like add-ons, I mean, like there are ways that many toys can become good, but if there really is like one way to build the track and one button to push, and then it's not well made, so like after 6 months it's broken and you just have to throw the whole thing out, like that is also a bad toy.
Bad toy.
Well, that's a unique description too, because that is a toy that is self-contained. It can never kind of coexist with other toys where weird animal beast could in very funny ways.
Right. Yes.
So, I mean,
and then make sweet love and then have a sloth novel. As it pertains to like playground design, I think you created the best playground my kids have ever gone to. It must be a similar mentality as well, that it's not single use.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's single use in the sense that kids go there to just burn off energy and like run around like crazy people. But my approach to designing Sweetwater, for instance, was very much to not design a playground. Like, I wanted it to be this kind of like scary industrial relic that kids from the beginning would be kind of scared to go in or something. Like, I wanted it to not, I didn't want them to understand the function right off the bat.
Right.
Where most playgrounds you go in, and kids will understand the utility of every single element in the playground before they even, before they engage with it at all. So it was very important for me that there was a level of disconnect with the people entering it, so they were forced to explore it more and kind of find out those, kind of the different ways you can interact with it.
And that's kind of similar to here, which is, I mean, yes, it's clear that you can buy things, and I hope everyone does buy many things.
Thank you.
but there is this level of, ambiguity a little bit on what the function of the space is.
Yeah, there's different layers as you walk through the space. You walk into like this old timey general store, and then you have to find the magic door and walk through the path. And even then, like, there's little hidden secrets across the entire landscape. So,
yeah. Well, like, both of you guys are new, kind of. You have your first career, sort of, and then you've pivoted and or expanded and are also working with like children and playground design and with camp here. Oh yeah, take the bad toy.
Bad toy.
What has been, Mark, I know a little bit about your struggles, but what has been the most challenging or like interesting thing that has to do with kind of working in the world of children and design for children?
We're trying to build a chain of permanent retail stores with these temporary themes that rotate across the country. So right now you're in Base Camp, which is a nostalgic New England summer camp vibe. You may walk into a camp in a couple of weeks that's completely different and bright and colorful and a whole different world. And I think as we've come to design these experiences, it's really interesting to try and thread the needle between things that are fun for the kids, things that the adults don't absolutely hate and like as well. And then the layers, as you said earlier, of the discovery that can happen across the different experiences. And it's a challenge to try and hit all of those marks.
Plus you also have the retail just component.
Yeah, but that's the opportunity, I think, is trying to like find where these circles overlap and deliver a unique experience that the entire family is enjoying.
Yeah, and you're the only guest who's been on two times on the podcast. I mean me, but I'm the host, so I have to be there.
Yeah.
when we first talked to you, you had mentioned something about you having to navigate the rules and regulations around like children's playground design, which you write about in your book, how best to do this. Maybe if you could tell a little bit about the first playground, which is so much like what you were describing Sweetwater as. It's like a quasi-industrial open space.
Yeah, the first playgrounds were actually established in Boston in the 1860s, and they were just an empty lot filled with sand, and they were called sand gardens. And they were kind of built for poor kids to have something to do in the summer in the city. And so they were completely open-ended. There was somebody called a matron who was sort of making sure that like the big kids didn't rough up the little kids, but other than that, it was just like, go play in the sand pile. I know, it is amazing. And now we see that like they're taking sandboxes out of playgrounds because they don't want the maintenance, because they're afraid of vermin, all of this stuff. And you're like, sand is like the most essential thing for kids to be able to play with, and it's really sad that they've become so reduced. And like probably any difficulties you had in designing sort of had to do with this set of regulations that came in the 80s that really wanted to eliminate risk from playgrounds, but has ended up making them very much all the same.
Yeah. And it's a tricky thing to balance, and it really takes, so I had the luxury of working with a safety expert that was very interested in interpreting the rule books in unique ways. And this is a rare thing to find, because there's liability with playgrounds, and in America, everyone wants to sue everyone for everything. So, you know, it's hard to find someone interested in like doing something really unique and special. And so it's very important to, well, at least for me, when forming a team, finding those people that are all ready to do something kind of unique and special.
Tell me about like a particular challenge you had. I know you were talking about one of the things that I think makes a playground wonderful is the privacy, but you were saying that creating private spaces for children in the playground was really difficult to get through the regulatory system.
Well, and even parents today, like their biggest comment on my playground, or the thing that they like the least, is their inability to see their kid at every moment. And for me, I was doing that intentionally, which is like, kids need some separation from their parents. And these are just small moments of separation, but even with that, parents are like, I want to see my kid from the time he goes up there to, you know, like, and so that is a challenge in and of itself, where it would follow the rule books because we had a perforated screen.
Sorry, by the way, because I don't think we mentioned, have you been to the Domino?
I haven't yet, no.
Oh, gotta go.
I will.
It's great.
I will.
Now it's warm around and it's But basically the theme of the playground is it's in the site of the old sugar refinery, Domino Sugar Refinery, and it mimics in some way the refining process.
Yeah.
Hopefully minus the colonial oppression and exploitation of millions of individuals. So that part is outside of the scope of the playground.
Yeah.
But you have like silos and small houses and that kind of thing.
It was very much, it was an attempt to just kind of reflect the chaotic infrastructure that was on that site that is now all gone. And so like making sure I retain some of that historical elements. It was designed in a way that it was supposed to mimic the refining process. So child enters as sugar cane, goes through the processes of being chopped up, rotated, filtered, and then exited as sugar cubes or molasses or raw sugar. So, I mean, that was like the kind of conceptual motivation. And then it was like laying this all out and then working with the safety expert being like, okay, how is this possible? And it was a lot of stupidest thing where, you know, it had to be moved over 3 inches because this was a head, you know, whatever entrapment or, and there's two code books that you have to kind of look at simultaneously and interpret in their own way. I don't even know what the two different ones.
I think it's the Consumer Product Safety Commission and then the ASTM, but
exactly.
I can't remember what that stands for.
Yes.
But yeah.
Americans something.
Yeah.
Americans hate fun.
Yeah.
Americans united against fun and playgrounds.
Yeah. No, and it's, I mean, the truth is that a lot of the regulations that came in the 80s, like, are useful. Like, head entrapment. There's no reason to have bars, like, so far apart that your kid can get their head stuck in them, where if you move the bar over 2 inches, then kids cannot put their head in. Like, it's fine. It, like, makes no design difference.
Yep.
And it's good that we have established that rule.
Yeah. Or safety surfacing.
But then there are a lot of other things that just start to kind of pile up on each other and mean, like, you can't have a slide that's exciting for any kid over the age of five, so then older kids don't want to go to that playground. And then, you know, it just really kind of makes these playgrounds so tight and so similar that they aren't fun for a wide range of kids, and they don't teach the kind of physical skills that, like, a positive play space should be teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be back after a word from our sponsors.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just two capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
How have you been experiencing children's design? I mean, like, now you're, I know you have the retail aspect, but, like, you're around toys, I'm sure, a lot.
Yeah, like, see a lot of toys.
Are you bullish? Are you bearish on design? Do you think there's interesting things happening? Do you think there's more good toys or bad toys, or, you know?
There are a lot of people making great stuff. And I think they're going back to some of the early toys and adding a new twist to them. You know, if you look at some of the toys here, my favorite stuff is the Kid Made Modern stuff, which is a craft brand. And
oh, yeah, I think I saw them at the toy fair.
I'm sure you did.
Booth,
they were
27403.
Wow. Really?
No.
Oh. But, you know, it's all about color and craft and design, and it's not stuff that's done. Is that from Kid Made Modern, by the way?
No, I made this.
Okay,
this is,
cool.
This is like perler beads, beads that you iron.
I think they have a kit for the same thing. But companies that are doing things with craft, doing things with raw materials, natural rubbers, etc. There's really fun stuff happening. And at the same time, we carry mass toys too, but we kind of cast them in a new light where, you know, you think of them in a new way because of the way they're merchandised.
What's like an example of that?
A good example of that is like we sell like FDNY like Matchbox cars type stuff, but it's like next to our station wagon that you climb in and you can only find them if you like look under the seat.
Right.
So there's a bit of discovery and so on attached to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, like in building the store too, there's slides and all sorts of play services where the same regulations and things like that come into play.
Yeah, I guess what I'm hearing from this whole discussion is, actually, I was talking at the Toy Fair yesterday. I was talking to the CEO of Ravensburger, which is a
that guy's great.
Yeah, he's from Ravensburg in Germany, which is an actual place with this toy company. and they're very analog. Like, that's, they do a lot of interaction design, but it's all analog. So it's like an analog pinball machine, or amazing Gravitrax is this marble system.
Yep.
And I was kind of thinking about the fact that toys can do more and more and more, but then that leaves smaller and smaller space for the kid to interact with it. You know, like, technology is such that you can have a completely self-sustaining toy that can play with itself and doesn't even need a kid, you know? And so it's about a mindful scaling back of capacity, which goes against so much of what we generally, outside of the world of kids, like, gun for.
Yeah, and I think also, like, a lot of the sort of simple toys, like blocks, they start to add on, like, oh, not only is your kid playing with blocks, but he's also learning to code when he's 3 years old. And that's just, like, so unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, 3-year-olds should be thinking about gravity and patterns and, like, building something that looks like their house. And, like, learning to code can happen later. And so I feel like there's this kind of front-loading of all of this information that's really, like, not necessary for kids' brains to grow.
On the other hand, like, so I work at Fatherly, right? And I go around and I'm like, hey, show me your newness. You know, because I have to. It's like, and I think there's, like, this, obviously, industry-wide pressure to always have some novelty there.
Yeah.
And, like, well, I did like it, you know, if you go down in the basement. So you have all the big brands up top, like Mattel and Melissa and Doug. I'll never write about it. I do not like Melissa and Doug. She was just not nice about it. And
was,
like,
it Melissa?
No, it was Doug. No. It's some functionary.
Okay.
Or like Play School or whatever the big brands are. But then down in the bottom, you had the old school, like, or even just mom and pop toy makers.
Yep.
So, yeah, same product. I've had it for 45 years.
And they're not trying to be anything they're not. It's good.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Is that about toys that. We as adults keep on trying to evolve the category, but kids are only kids for a little while. Everything's new to them. Like, the same toy that we loved, they'll also love. But
I mean, I'm the person that bought their daughter vintage Fisher-Price, like, A-frame dollhouse on Etsy. Yeah. So, it's like, it was actually a toy that I always wanted, and my parents did not buy it for me, and so I was like, I'm going to buy it for my kid.
Rectifying the past.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I think also, I mean, people don't spend enough. I think that to have, like, a lot of one toy is really awesome. I mean, like, a lot of Legos, a lot of Magna Tiles, a lot. There's this other, like, toy, like, called Tubation. Like, to have a lot is a gift. And so I feel like when people are trying to buy a new gift for a kid, they can just add on to a set they already have, and we don't talk about that enough.
Yeah.
Just like, it's great to have 300 pieces.
What system are you in? And then,
right. So we have like 3 systems that have turned out that my kids really love, and I'm just like, I'd much rather just
Lego,
stick with those.
Lego
Magna Tiles, and actually Zoob, which is something I write about in my book, which is like a 90s toy. That lets you build sort of jointed figures and dinosaurs and things like that. It has a ball and socket connection. And that's actually much less expensive than Lego and Magna Tiles, because I definitely, like, think about the costs of things a lot. And I think Zoob is an amazing toy.
Here's the news you can use. Before a birthday party, ask the family, what system do you use? And then get them into that system.
And that is actually starts going down a pretty interesting direction, because I think one of the biggest problems for us in terms of the things that we get from other people, like when my mom sends gifts, I'm sorry, Mom, I always trash my mom, I don't mean to, but like she will send like the worst plastic light up singing thing you could possibly find, mostly because that's what she has access to. It's like she goes to her nearby toy
store.
Where does she
live?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
She's not going to be able to find a place like this where she can kind of find something that might be whatever, unique or simple or German made or all wood or whatever. So the things she has access to, for the most part, are these kind of horrible things. And so what we've been trying to do is train family members to be like, hey, Mom, when you send a plastic thing, maybe send an all-wood thing also that doesn't have electronics.
What an ask!
I know, it's annoying.
Do this thing that you're already doing, and also this really other hard thing.
Well, because I don't
if
know how
else
to...
If you love me...
Because you need, I think it's important to kind of remind people that there are other options that might be more difficult to find, but are out there.
Yeah, I mean, that if you could figure out a way to have people only give you gifts of a system already established within your household that is not annoying and they're not like, feel free to purchase Legos, you know, like, because the whole etiquette about gift giving is so, like, you know, like, all of us.
It is very complicated.
We all have kids, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
How old are yours?
I have a 2.5-year-old.
Okay, so 2.5, 8 and 11, 1, 5 and 7. It's like, we get a lot of gifts, and 75% of them are crap.
Yeah.
And, like, to tell someone, like, you know.
It's crazy to me that registries are only for birthdays and, I'm sorry, weddings and, when else do you have them? Having a kid. Baby registry and wedding registries. Like, kids' birthdays should have registries. Like, kids know what they want.
This might be a little off topic, but not for the kids, but for the grandparents. Like, I let my kids keep an Amazon wish list, like, throughout the year.
Perfect.
Like, whenever they ask me for something, like, when it's not their birthday, I say, put it on your wish list. And it's actually been really great because it immediately takes away that whole discussion about, like, what I am or am not going to buy them at that moment because they feel like they'll get it eventually.
Great. Right.
And it's actually taught them how much things cost because my son has been really into Lego, and so he started putting, like, $150 Lego sets on his list. And I was like, sweetie, I think your grandparents' top limit is $75. And he was like, okay. Like, he had the information, so he found, like, the Star Wars Lego sets that were under $75. So, I mean, like, you can actually use these things, like, in lots of different ways. I know Amazon is problematic.
Or just go to Long Island, anymore.
Yeah. And I'm also glad that you brought up craft kits before, because especially for my daughter and her friends, like, kids, like, I would say 6 to 9, like, craft kits are just huge, and those are awesome. She got, you know, 10 craft kits for her birthday last year, and we were using them into October. It's like, rainy day, let's see if you have anything left from the birthday, and it was like, brand new, like, let's do Shrinky Dinks. It was awesome.
Yeah, and parents get to be involved in it, and it's not just something you hand over and walk away.
Yes, I love to color, so I'm very psyched about the craft kits,
The thing that I've noticed about Toy Fair, though, is how many toys are also training our kids to be, like, I don't know if you want to say consumers or whatever, you know, like, they're
surprise stuff and
they're just like miniature consumer. Like, there's a spot, like, there's a craft kit booth, but then there's like a all day spa adventure, you know, and they had the little things for between your fingers and toes and, you know, a little miniature robe. And it reminds me of that quote about, that I think, like, Rockefeller said about education. It's like, I don't want thinkers, I want workers, you know? And I feel like so many toys are like, I don't want kids who play, I want kids who consume. And I think for me, that's also been a challenge with the toys that I bring for my boys. It's like, toys communicate something one way or the other.
Yep.
And I want it to communicate, as you mentioned in your book, just like a spirit of adventure and creativity. With no agenda.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times design has an agenda, you know?
Yeah. Well, but it's interesting because I think most designers have some story about, and I don't know if it's true, about playing with Lego or like having 1,000 drawing pads or like their childhoods are filled with these open-ended toys, and like that is kind of what leads to a creative mind, like helps children to be in touch with their own desires. And so it's like, we know that open-ended is better for creativity, but like the world around us, I mean, as you say, is sending different messages. So you really just have to be like smart as a consumer and like smart as somebody going through the world and making choices.
What did you play with growing up?
I honestly don't remember playing with very much. I do remember more like me, my dad, my mom's drawing a lot.
Yeah.
It was definitely more activity based. We'd be going outside a lot. It was less object based and much more experiential, which I think is probably the better option. Long term is just like, or at least that's how my approach is to public space. That's why I focus on public space in general. It's like, it is best for kids and adults to be outside all of the time, right? Like in a space where they're kind of like fighting, arguing, tussling, talking, loving, like all these things. There's nothing more healthy than social interaction in public space, and it's kind of my priority to do that as much as possible.
Like you did the reading, can you talk a little bit about the Reading Nest project you did?
Yeah, the Reading Nest project was a project that I did in Cleveland, Ohio, outside the Cleveland Public Library. And it was kind of inspired by the griffins that guard the library, and they guard a lot of institutional buildings or big government buildings, and griffins are known to be fiercely protective of their nests, and they make their nests of pure gold. And so I made this really massive nest in their reading garden with using over 10,000 reclaimed pallet boards, painted gold, and it became this kind of like epicenter for interaction. So they would have daily readings there, or adults, they would have yoga inside the nest, or there was just like always activities. And it was a small budget project, but it really helped transform the space and transform how people saw that space. And it was also temporary, and there's a certain level of benefit for temporary projects, is that it helps people see spaces in a new way and then see what they are like when they go back. And so that kind of like testing of materials and spaces in the public realm, I also find to be a pretty interesting and useful approach.
We'll be back after a word from our sponsors.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
So I guess the question I have for all of you guys is how having kids has changed your thoughts on design or how you think of it. I'll start with you, Ben.
Okay.
That's tough.
Well, I was always in the product design space and had never made anything for kids. And I remember the first thing someone said to me after we brought Rocco home was, how long until you're going to start making stuff for kids? Because the people knew I couldn't hold myself back. Didn't make a single thing, didn't even think about it until his first year birthday. First year birthday, we had nothing in the house for him, nothing. First year birthday, everyone started bringing in toys and we started bringing in stuff into the house. And it was then that I started like seeing all of this like stuff that got gifted to us and started to think about how I really wanted my kid Rocco to experience these these toys when he did in a space with other kids and not just at home alone on the floor. And that kind of was the beginning of how camp got started. I don't know. That's kind of the genesis. And I wish I got started in this space earlier, because I feel like there's not enough people playing with the category.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like toy stores in general, they work no matter how they're designed. Like, they function. Kids want to buy the things that are there, and it's like, how do you make it more than that? How do you make it not just functional but kind of beautiful as well?
Yeah, we wanted to design a space where people come and buy things sometimes.
Yeah.
And are also okay coming and just playing and having it be a community center. And I think that's what this place represents. And sure, there's a lot of product on the wall, but I mean, my favorite, I don't know what to call my favorite thing, but a thing that happens very often is I'm like standing on Fifth Avenue out in front of the store, and like I hear the pep talk that the parents give the kids before they walk into the store, and they're like, all right, we're going in there, and we're here to play, we're not buying anything, and you know what, it's completely fine, because I know that when they do go to their next birthday party, or when they do, you know, when that kid's having a special moment in their lives, they will come back here and be able to buy something. But until then, it's just a place where they can come, have fun, ride weird ponies, and be themselves, so...
Yeah. That pony does move like a beaut.
Yeah, the pony cycle is one of my favorite things in the store.
Pony cycle.
It's called a pony cycle. You bop up and down and travels, and it makes, first of all, it makes the store into like this weird, magical, mythical place where you're trying to figure out how that thing is moving. And second, it is actually like an innovative thing that doesn't feel like an extrapolation of anything else on the market.
Yeah. How about you? That book, I think you wrote after you had, I mean, yes, you wrote it after, but you write in the introduction about, that's what you started thinking about.
Yeah, no, it was definitely the same thing. Like, I had a baby, but I was already a design critic, and then it's like, you're sitting at home with your baby, and you're like, what is all this crap?
Yeah.
I mean, I also, like, have a lot of thoughts about, like, the gendering of things, so I feel like my, like, beginning of my kind of irritation, which generally leads to, like, my topics that I write about, was really kids' clothes and how gendered they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, like, the biggest sort of revelation from writing the book, and the thing I think of a lot in relationship to having kids, is actually maintenance. And, like, kids will wreck stuff. They will just wreck it. And so thinking about making things that will last, and, like, what materials will really stand up to that, and then also, like, what products will stand the test of time and can grow with your kid, like, all of that is really, like, what I took from my research and I think is so important to think about.
You have that, it's in your book, and it's a quite famous design, that chair.
Oh, the Trip Trap chair. Yeah, I love it's called the Trip Trap chair. It's made by Stokey, and you can move the foot rest and the seat up and down as your kids grow. And I bought one for my son, and he's 11, and he's still using it. So, like, it's expensive, but it lasts.
Right.
Yeah.
And how about you? You have a one-year-old. You designed the playground before your kid was born.
Yeah, she was en route.
Yeah.
But, yes. So it'll be worn in by the time she gets to it.
Right.
Yeah.
So even the stuff that my mom sends, and I'm like, ah, Mom, this is not great.
You're trashing your mom again.
I know, but hold on, I'm gonna untrash her real fast.
Yeah.
Like, the things that she sends that are like, light up doing these things, my daughter loves them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like when she's losing her mind on the changing table, I go to the toy that my mom gave, and it's like, it'll keep her occupied for the 3 minutes it takes me to do this, you know, cloth diaper. So, I mean, for me, it's important for my daughter to have a range of things, like a range of materials, range of textures, maintenance, all these things, those logistical things are good, but I just want her to have a lot of experience with stuff. But I think the thing that I've been focused on more than actual objects is just environment. So we're currently looking for a new daycare, and you've probably all done this, it is like insane, and I leave these things being like, okay, if she goes here, she will be claustrophobic, she will most likely be depressed, and certainly be anxious for the rest of her life. And so it's like, those are the things I'm trying, and so they relate to the objects, but it's really like, these things within a larger environment. you know, how do we make sure that she has UV light getting to her most of the day? And, you know what I mean? Like, in fresh air for a few
minutes. Don't you wish you weren't a designer sometimes? You didn't have to think about all these things.
My kids went to this amazing, like, Reggio-based preschool that was in a basement, but they managed to make it seem light. It was in a basement.
Having a designer's mind is such a curse sometimes. Yeah. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the environmental thing. I mean, like, yeah, it's a curse, I think, because there's actually not that much more you can do about it. I mean, like, if you are a normal person trying to get daycare that's in this light-filled, penthouse in Soho with all wooden toys, it's like, okay, great, that's $80,000.
Sometimes you wind up, what often happens is you won't find what you're looking for, and then you make the horrible decision of starting it.
Yeah. So that's your next career. Mark Engelman, daycare.
Sounds like you're getting in the daycare business.
I was actually thinking about that, just offering my services free, just to be like, listen, okay, I bring my daughter here.
I actually know people who've done that.
Right, and I'll be like, listen, we'll work this out together. Yeah. Like, I won't even charge you, we'll just, you know.
Yep. Are you working on any more playgrounds?
I'm not right now. I've actually been doing a lot of I've been kind of jumping from school to school talking about playground design, which has been pretty cool. But not working on playgrounds. My work in general is very interactive for a variety of age groups.
Yeah.
So I'm working on a project for New York Public Library for a series of small sculptures in one of their branches that is very much geared towards kids investigating the space. And a couple projects in California, all of which are very much about investigating public space for kids and adults.
Why not do another? I want you to do another playground. I would
love it. My phone isn't ringing. I'm like, come on, people. It was the best playground ever made.
Yeah,
in the history of man. But something will pop up. But I would love to.
Are there like kings of the playground design world?
Yes. Yeah. There are certainly the big players that are just designing playgrounds. Every week.
Voldemort, you won't mention him. Okay. And what are you working on?
I'm the architecture critic for Curb, so I'm actually really looking forward to Hudson Yards opening because that's kind of like a giant adult playground, and
Javits.
Cannot wait to write about it.
So.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you for hanging out on the stage and chatting. I think design will get better. And it's good now. I don't know how to wrap this up. I like chatting with you.
Well, before we end, I was actually curious, because you guys know a little bit more about the toy design world. Before this, I was like trying to cram to see like toys. And I was just looking up toys that I liked most when I was a kid. I was like, okay, I'll Slinky, Silly Putty, Lincoln Logs. And all the toys that I liked most were not designed by toy designers. They were designed by architects or engineers.
Or parents.
Troll dolls.
Yep.
And I wonder if that is still consistent today, or if toy products are very much designed by big companies in toy designers, or if that is a disconnect between...
Well, that Fugglers is like a really good example, what I was talking about earlier. That was designed by a dude on Etsy, right?
I think so, yeah.
And it's a doll with like very human-like teeth. It's my favorite because it's just so creepy.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, I like the same thing in children's literature, like a little bit of like Maurice Sendak Darkness or Tommy Unger.
Yeah.
And that has the same sense. But now that was bought by Spin Master, and now Spin Master manufactures it. So to my knowledge, a lot of toy development still happens at the individual level, but there are such big players that they come in and help.
Yeah, it's still a very strong inventor community. But the big guys have the distribution, so it's likely like under their title. But again, my favorite stuff is the people that like transcended industries to create their lines. Like the Kid Made Modern stuff is Todd Oldham. He's a fashion designer, and again, that's like the best. That's the best stuff in the store. So.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Okay, guys, that's
Thanks.
It. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Michael. Well, I want to thank our guests, Mark Riegelman II, Alexandra Lang, Ben Kaufman of Camp. I want to thank Camp for having us. I want to thank our producer, Anthony Roman. I also produced it. Thanks, me. And John Flores for holding the microphone so nicely next to my face. Andrew Berman, our executive producer. If you like the podcast, rate and review it. If you don't, disregard this. And see you next week.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.